Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Once a month, Mayor Vi Lyles is on the program. This will be her first visit of 2021, and already she and City Council have a lot on their plates. Some things like deciding on the Charlotte Moves Transit Plan and the sales tax to hike to help fund it are holdovers from last year, but at Council and their recent retreat, they began discussing other matters like bumping council's pay and running in staggered nonpartisan elections. And there's more, so let's get to it. Happy New Year, Mayor. Welcome back.
Happy New Year, Mike. And thanks to all of the listeners that are still tuning in.
Well, look, let's hope they continue to tune in.
I hope so, too.
The nation has been, of course, consumed with what happened on Capitol Hill last week. What was your reaction to what you witnessed as a lawmaker and as somebody who is in politics and has constituents who may or may not agree with you?
Well, you know, I don't think that you could look at this and think about politics when we saw what happened at the Capitol. What I saw was absolute lunacy. The idea that we feel like we can overrun the people's house because individually we elected someone that you disagreed with or didn't vote for. I mean, this has never happened. But I will tell you my very first thoughts as a Black woman is that if that had been Black people, it would have been an entirely different situation. And we have to own this and understand what happens when you see people calling themselves patriots, breaking the law, harming people. People died as a result of this incident. Can you imagine what that had been like if those were people of color? I just think that it continues to show us the disparity between Black and brown people in this country and what we call protests. But then let's go a little bit further. I can't even imagine that we have things like the Proud Boys and these institutions that are available on that feed the social media organization, that we're not dealing with it. So today, as I think about what the FBI is doing, what the Congress needs to be doing, I don't know if we recover from this very quickly. I don't know if we ever recover. In fact, why not? We shouldn't recover. We should examine it carefully, look at all of the things that work against what we call is our democracy and figure out what we're going to do about it.
What kind of accountability are you looking for? And from whom?
Well, as you can imagine, I believe that people, when they tell you who they are, you should believe them. Maya Angelou's famous quote about that. And the accountability that I hope to have is when the voters see the next election coming around, that they see where people stood, which side of the line they stood on, whether they stood for democracy or if they stood for an ideology. And that's what I think voters have to do.
Democrats, of course, launched an impeachment move for the president. He's the first president to be impeached twice. It's just days before Joe Biden is about to take the reins as the president of the United States. Is this move toward impeachment, in your mind, is it or should it be about a slap on the wrist, a punishment, putting politicians on notice that this is unacceptable behavior going forward? Or are you hoping that the Senate tries Mr. Trump at some point, either now or before, or once Biden's in office, to make sure he can never hold office again? What do you think the end game here is or should be?
I think the end game should be to recover our trust in government. You know, when people
do this, is this the way to do that? Because you're going to alienate a bunch of Republicans and some independents.
I think this is President-elect Biden has been very consistent in his statement, and I worked for his election, and that he saw the divisiveness of the current president. He saw what the impact was across this country, and yet we still had, I would not call it a close election. I mean, it was more than what the current president achieved when he was first elected. But I think President Biden will be a leader that is consistently saying we have to unify our country. How, what those tools are, probably a little bit above my pay grade, but I think as mayor of Charlotte, what we continue to do here is focus on how we see the disparities in our own city. How do we close the economic income gaps that we have? How do we create an equitable city? You talked, we're just coming out of our strategy session to talk about what do we do for the remainder of this year as we try to lead a fast-growing city. We can't forget our values. And that's what I think. If we have leadership at the federal and state and local level that leads with the values of this country, then we can do something better.
The president never even called the vice president to see how he was doing as the Capitol was under siege. That's not really a surprise to many people because he doesn't seem to have that gene. But you called Dan Bishop, 10th District Congressman Dan Bishop, a Republican, to see how he was doing. What led you to reach out to him?
Well, I believe that when you know someone that's going through a difficult time, that you reach out. So I actually text Congresswoman Alma Adams, who lives here in Charlotte. I text Dan Bishop, whom served here as a county commissioner, and I text Senator Tillis to ask each of them how they were doing and just to say that we wish you well during this very difficult time. And that's who I am. And I know that some people said that I gave opportunity or weaponized my words. All of that can be said, but at the end of the day, I am the person that believes that you care for the people around you and their positions at that time. What I was asking about is their well-being. Dan Bishop and I are getting further and further apart. And in terms of philosophy, I worry and I have a quandary about that. But that doesn't make my feelings that his safety is important. I don't want to be one of those people storming the Capitol and hitting police officers with fire hydrants. I don't want to see that kind of behavior. And I think by showing empathy with people in whatever situation there is an act of kindness and good.
I have once again demonstrated my math challengedness because Dan Bishop is in the 9th Congressional District. Numbers are not my friend. law enforcement's response to the rioters was woefully inadequate, in Washington. Capitol Hill police were grossly unmanned. Videos show that several of them may have ushered protesters through the barricades. More than two Capitol Hill police officers have now been suspended, but one was suspended for taking a selfie with the protester. Another was wearing a MAGA hat. That has led to calls for an investigation into the Capitol Police, and the mayors in some cities around the country have also begun investigations to make sure that their city's police departments have not been infiltrated by operatives from the far-right fringe groups. Is something similar happening here? Is an investigation into our department being conducted, and should it be?
That's so current because on this week I spoke with Chief Jennings and asked that question, and they have started looking at social media. They've always looked at social media. For officers, there's always been a code of conduct that when you are a person that has the right to enforce laws, that you cannot be unlawful. And Chief Jennings believes in that. The command staff believes in that. And the simple answer is that he is going to hold every officer to that code of conduct, and he is going to look into this. My hope is that we don't have a situation like that. But today, in today's world of where people have, the ability to disguise who they really are, we always have to be diligent, and CMPD is being diligent.
Where do you draw the line, though? Just because somebody is on the right doesn't mean they don't have a right to express themselves. So where do you put the line that says this is unacceptable behavior, either as a Twitter comment or the fact that you dress up on the weekends in a militia outfit and go into the woods with your friends? Where do you put the line?
It's really interesting that you say that because there is a line, and the line begins with law. And if you do something that's unlawful, if you trespass on property, if you attack or another individual with the intent to harm, that's against the law. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not going to pretend to be one, but I think our police chief believes that it's not about what you do that's your beliefs. It's whether or not you have the ability to enforce your accountability, your responsibility as a law enforcement officer. And I think that's where people have gotten. The government is very different than the private sector. I have seen the news articles that says that there are many people that are going to suffer consequences because they work in the private sector. In the private sector, you can say, this is what we do and this is what we believe, and you're out of here. And that can help. But in government, we have to respect people's rights and their beliefs, but we also have to expect them to act with the accountability that they have lawful behavior. And that is the line that we look at.
There was a lot of controversy about whether or not we should have volunteered to host the Republican National Convention. Did we dodge a bullet because of COVID? I mean, would we have seen crowds like they saw in Washington if we had hosted the RNC here? Are
No,
you relieved?
relief might be one word. Let me just say this, that I thought it was the right thing to do to put our city on the map. When COVID happened, you obviously saw the amount of work that had to go into it. We had 2 days of committee meetings here from our Republican National Committee, and I think that we did what we did to follow the protocols for COVID. We followed the CDC guidelines. We followed our public health guidelines, and we implemented that, and we did not see a surge as a result of it. I would say the people in Alabama for the Crimson Tide, those are the folks that are going to be the next surge. We know these things. This is something the pattern has been established. You have to manage these issues as this is a pandemic, not a one-day event. So people take exception to their one day of celebration. They're putting all of us at risk. Look at where we are in Mecklenburg County right now. Look at how much we're having to do. Kids need to be able to learn. And as many adults that say that, you have to behave as if you want to change this COVID, this pandemic, and you as adults have to begin to act differently. So I believe at the time our convention plans changed, and we adapted to that. We adapted with the idea of public health in mind.
Speaking of public health, the Mecklenburg County Health Director, Gibby Harris, today is in the paper talking about the pandemic and recommending that everyone stay home except for essential activities for the next 3 weeks. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that and then move into some of the things that City Council and you have been discussing as you had your retreat this week and about some of the things on your plate that may come up in the course of 2021. We're talking with Mayor Vial Lyles. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks. I'm listener funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Every month, Mayor Vial Lyles, Charlotte Mayor Vial Lyles, joins us, and today's that day. The pandemic is not getting better. It's getting worse. Health officials in LA, well, that's a long way away, but and they are overwhelmed in their hospitals, say that now they're recommending if you live in a home with somebody who is immunocompromised, that you wear masks at home. The governor extended phase three a couple of weeks ago through the end of January. There's a 10 p.m. curfew here in effect. Gibby Harris has suggested that over the next 3 weeks, we only go and outside of our homes for essential activities. And she's now saying that the schools should be virtual when they go back. How do you explain the fact that we just can't seem to get a handle not only on the pandemic, but our behavior?
Well, this is a personal opinion, not as well informed as someone like Gibby Harris, who has an immense amount of accountability and responsibility and has acted, I think, with courage to do the right things that she believes. I think she works with the Secretary Cohen. I think that she's so invested in seeing this through. You know, sometimes we forget about people that serve us, like in these positions, that how much humanity they have to give to be able to constantly think what's going to be best for the whole versus, you know, what's going to be best for any individual group. So this is, I just want to give Gibby Harris for what you do. Thank you for all of the folks in our essential workers in healthcare, because we know that the beds are getting full. And I think we have an opportunity that we know that the solution is to step back and step away from contact with others. We know that if we are about this effort, that it's possible by limiting personal contact to get the numbers down. And I think that's what the public health director is trying to say, because the numbers are surging. It was everything we all know, Thanksgiving. It was Hanukkah, Christmas, and now we're in New Year's and all of that. And it's not just Mecklenburg County. This is all across our state. It's across our country. Mayor Garcetti and I exchange emails pretty frequently, and what he's having to deal with is a magnitude of like nothing that he's had to conquer, because it's something that you have to deal with human behavior. So my sense is that our public health officials are doing their very best to make sure that we understand the depth of this pandemic. And until we can get that kind of cooperation to act on as they see needed, then we're going to have to wait for the vaccines. Now, I have to say, I really appreciate and saw that Arizona was beginning mass vaccinations, Florida, some of the other places. And I hope that that's something that we will look at, both the supply side and the demand side. The demand for the vaccines, we need to get that done. And I believe that that's an important effort. But we also have to stop giving each other this virus as well.
Let's move on to some of the things we initially planned to talk about before Gibby Harris's announcement of this week, and also some other things. Charlotte City Council's strategy retreat brought a surprise right at the start to everybody, I think, on council, and that was the resignation of longtime councilman, the city's longest serving councilman, James Smudgy Mitchell. We had begun talking about the reason that led to this at the end of the year, and that was the fact that he has assumed the head. He's going to be the head of R.J. Leeper Construction, and it does work with the city. So was this move really a surprise?
Well, I think that when you look at some of the details around it, whenever someone has served as well as Councilmember Mitchell did, that's long and with such impact, I think it's not a surprise, but it's certainly, just like anything else, it's a process. It's a process to learn that you have great opportunity to do something that would be significant to the efforts that you believe in around minority business participation. It's a great opportunity for him, but at the same time, imagine giving up something that was your heart and soul for a long time. So I think sometimes, we had to make he had to make a decision, and that when he made the decision to step into a role that's going to help build our city, then that meant by state law that there were consequences of that. And working through those consequences, he made a decision to resign. And we so much appreciate what he has done. native Charlottean, West Charlotte grad, always in the forefront around thinking about minority business participation and workforce development, especially for those in greatest need. He deserves a lot of kudos, and we hope to give him those kudos in an appropriate way, public, when it's possible.
This had to have been inevitable, and I think he probably knew, even though he may have struggled with the decision, had to be inevitable, because I think it was last August that Smudgy Mitchell was one of the people on council concerned with awarding a city contract to a nonprofit run by another member of council, Tariq Bakari. And that turned out to be that organization did not get the contract because Tariq Bakari is on council. That made me think yesterday that that instance led to a flurry of lawsuits. Everybody on council, I think, including you.
Ethics investigation, not lawsuits. We weren't sued,
okay,
please.
Okay, investigations.
Ethics investigation.
Where does all that stand? Because that was back in August, and I haven't heard a word about it since.
Well, that's because sometimes it's a lot more fun or more fireworks when you can say the investigations are beginning, and when you come to the end and they're closed and there's no impropriety found. That's not it. It's kind of like Enron. Remember every Enron, but when at the end of the day they were proven not to have done what they were investigated for, the same way. But let me just move. I digress. I want to thank Ed Driggs and the members of the Council Committee on Effective Governance, because they took the ethics policy and they said, what do we need to do and how do we update this? This has happened, 4 or 5 years ago in the aftermath of Patrick Cannon's arrest. But now we're dealing with much more, I would say, issues that impact your day-to-day role as a council member, as well as your day-to-day role as a citizen of this community, as well as your role to support your family economically. So they have revised our ethics form. We have added additional information, and we'll have every council member will have the opportunity to meet individually with the city attorney to review those forms and review where there is any potential and to address those in advance versus waiting to see what happened. I think that both Councilmember Mitchell and Councilmember Bakari were kind of like our canaries in the coal mine, but it has ended up with a great result, with great scrutiny, as well as outcomes. So I'm grateful for all of them that have participated, because it gave us so much more clarity about these small things on ethics that we looked at. Being arrested was one, but now when we're talking about individual opportunities and your role as a council member, there's a lot more clarity around it.
Spending just a couple more seconds on James Mitchell, which I think he deserves, because he was on council, I think, for 2 decades. And
20 years, you're right.
Among the accomplishment that he listed on his way out was the bringing or helping to establish North Lake Mall and Truist Field, which is the baseball park downtown, and Bank of America Stadium, the bringing the CIAA tournament to Charlotte when we didn't have any tournaments, and helping to lay the groundwork for us becoming the sports city that we are. And you tweeted, he's been a champion for small and minority and women-owned businesses and has worked to create jobs while developing a strong, equitable economy and workforce for Charlotte. I'm assuming that all people on council are working toward those same ends, but did he often take the lead because of his business background?
Well, he actually was the chair of our Economic Development Committee, now into Workforce and Business Development Committee. And he did this over 20 years. Think about Charlotte 20 years ago. It wasn't always as much consensus politically around some of these goals. So when he started thinking about the CIAA came to Charlotte, and I remember there being police officers on each corner with guns and a presence. It's like all of these people are coming, and it's a safety incident. It was in one of those incidents that we said we had to have extra police enforcement. Today, we're in great regret not hosting the CIAA, and now I think it would be considered routine. So he did things when perhaps it wasn't all that popular. And so I think about the CIAA, I think about some of the disparity studies that we had to get approved by the council when there wasn't the leadership or the consensus among the council to do and deal with issues of disparity in race and gender.
Mitchell was an at-large member. State statute says he must be replaced by a Democrat. What will the timeline be for that? Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's up. That seat will be up for re-election in November.
Correct. So the timeline the council has discussed the and will have discussed the idea that we will have an application process. People will have the opportunity to address the council as a whole, and then the council votes for a new member who would serve until December, and in that to finish out and complete Councilmember Mitchell's term.
And one of the people that has mentioned an interest in running in November for that seat is Lawana Mayfield, who has been on council in the past and who is one of the more controversial members, was one of the more controversial members of council. Could she be one of those people being considered to fill the seat?
If she sends in her application, she will definitely be considered. I expect we will have a number of people come in and say that they're very interested in the seat, and the council will make the decision based upon some of the comments that they will make before the public, people talking about how to replace someone with that same expertise, filling the rounding out the council. I think that's not one of the top criteria that the council will use.
One of the things at the top of the to-do list at this retreat was the Charlotte Moves Task Force recommendation for the expansion of transport and transit and transportation opportunities, which would cost between $8 and $12 billion. We started talking about this late last year and about the 1 cent sales tax hike that would be needed to fund the city's portion of it, because there'd be a federal portion of it as well. Where did your discussions take you?
Well, we're now in the middle of, after hearing from the task force that was chaired by Harvey Gantt, former Mayor Gantt, as well as 25 other members across the county, we are now at that point that we have to decide, is the vision right? And that was the discussion that we're trying to have. But in addition to having the vision, can we take that vision and look at an implementation plan? I often talk about big things that we have to do are often very complex. And it's not just transit that we're talking about, although transit is a major portion of it. But the council had a great discussion and heard from experts that think about transportation as the future, how it works with 5G, how does it work with the idea of autonomous cars, how does it work with self-driving cars, and what are the steps that are being thought of now by those very creative people in transportation that we will have to adapt and work with. So we heard that. Then the second thing that we heard was about how we would love to do this as a county, but we have issues in our surrounding towns that have grown as a result of Charlotte, but haven't grown in a way that address some of the transportation needs. And you're very familiar in our northern towns, the issues that we're not able to negotiate an agreement on the red line that would be a commuter rail to the northern towns, which is so important to their viability, both people coming and going for industry and jobs. So we've got some issues that we're dealing with. We also have the issues of just basic municipal infrastructure. We've got the federal government who on the current president's term, talked about infrastructure and did nothing. In this case, will the new administration actually do something on infrastructure, and will we be ready to take advantage of that?
Let's talk about some of the things that have to happen, because obviously this is going to be a regional effort, and it's going to require, I think, buy-in from regional areas. You mentioned the northern part of Mecklenburg County. They voted, along with everybody else, for the previous sales tax hike to fund transit. But many of the folks up there believe they haven't seen any benefit from that because of what you mentioned, the red line, the commuter rail train, and our inability to negotiate with Norfolk Southern, who owns the right-of-way for that rail line. So that's not happened yet. But last week, the former Huntersville Mayor Jill Swain, who is also the executive director of the Huntersville Regional Chamber, wrote a favorable op-ed piece for The Observer, explaining the need for building out the transportation network of options. Did that surprise you that she's on board with this?
No, I think that I think everybody's on board with the vision. We understand that we are one of the fastest growing regions in this state. We know that we can't go, we have to build out in Mecklenburg County to be able to get to Cabarrus, to be able to get to Gaston, to get to Union. And so all of this, it doesn't surprise me because that's obvious. The question that I think we're debating is how to pay for it, which there's basically in this country, the idea of do you invest or do you do it investment in a committed way to move something in a large way, or do you do it incrementally and just try to figure out? I've not heard anyone say that we're in opposition to the vision or the investment. It's just how do you pay for it and how much commitment do you make at the time? So no, I'm not surprised.
Okay, but the council took a straw vote on this Monday. The two no votes came from the only two Republicans on council, Tariq Bakari and Ed Driggs. We can talk about their reservations, but Bakari commented that the Charlotte Moves Task Force report was, quote, a very robust description of how much money to ask for and how to sell that ask to the public. It is not a plan for what to do with the money. I don't have any idea how much money goes to light rail versus roads versus buses. And he added that there's little room for hiccups if this goes to a referendum in the fall. If you agree with that, can that be addressed between now and November?
I love my friend Mr. Bakari, but I don't agree with him on that. This whole plan was developed around the adopted mobility plans that the city council has had. So if you voted for the bikeway plan, if you voted for the sideway plan, you may not have been here to vote for the 2030 transit plan. But if you voted for congestion relief, then those are the plans that we have. These are documents that exist. In fact, that's the very first thing in the Charlotte Moves report, is to say the foundation of this effort is based upon adopted plans.
We'll come back, talk more about that and some of the other things that council discussed during their retreat in this past week. And we'll talk about that when we come back at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE and Facebook and everywhere else you get our program. Mayor Vial Isles is with us today. We're talking about the strategy retreat that the council recently participated in and some of the things that they talked about. One of those, of course, is the 1 cent sales tax hike for transportation options as recommended by the Charlotte Moves Task Force Vision Plan for the future of Charlotte. It's a regional effort because we're talking about not only the northern part of Mecklenburg County, but taking a light rail line from Matthews all the way to Belmont in Gaston County. I know that other places down in South Carolina have been asking to be included on the Blue Line and other transportation options. So this will require regional buy-in. Have those discussions started yet?
Absolutely, they started, and they're very tough discussions. I have learned in this role that there are facts and data, and then there's perspective. And we are dealing with all of that. So we're trying to get good data, have our facts lined up, and include every perspective on this. So I have a point of view, but we're trying to learn everyone's points of view because this only works if we have the ability to get everyone to a place of agreement. And I look at this, and agreement may mean that you don't get everything that you want, but you agree with the final plan to move forward. And that's going to be hard work. And it should be. This is a huge investment in closing the gap on mobility, getting a bus system that will be reliable and serve the working people in this community. It will be our connection between good paying jobs that may be located where people do not live. So there are so many good things about this that it should be hard. But as long as we keep in mind what we're doing and why we're doing it, that we're doing it for the people in this community, that we're doing it to create a culture where our air and water will be cleaner as a result, that we're trying to do it with technology that works, that all that, everything about this says to me, I believe that good people can find ways to come to a solution that's agreeable. And if it doesn't, you know, in my experience is that sometimes you have to have that big idea to show that you're ready. And if everyone else isn't ready, then we figure out a way to get as far as we can go, and we continue to forge ahead. This city is destined, or projected, I shouldn't say destined, projected to grow 400,000 additional people. So the first 10 years will be growing the size of Greensboro. The second 10 years will grow the size of Asheville. I think about this as, how do you move the people around that are here now, and how are you going to move the people coming? But more importantly for me, if we are going to have jobs in Cabarrus County, Gaston County, right now a lot of people come into our city, wouldn't it be great to have some of the people that need jobs that might be able to go out in a reasonable way and not have the cost of a car, which ranges between $2,500 and $5,000 a year in North Carolina. I think this is all about building a community that works for everyone.
You mentioned we're going to have tremendous growth. We're already the fifth fastest growing city in the country. And this plan would put transit options within a half mile of almost everybody living in the county. But that doesn't mean everybody agrees with it. Particularly, let's go back to Northern Mecklenburg, where they feel slighted by what has not happened as a result of the previous sales tax. Because in addition to the positive op-ed piece that the former mayor of Huntersville wrote in the Observer, you also received a letter from the current mayor of Huntersville, Cornelius and Davidson, highlighting their concerns with all of this. Mm-hmm. And I know that one is a demand for, quote, tangible projects for both North Mecklenburg in particular, a light rail project connecting that part of the county with the rest of the CATS system. What are some of their other concerns, and can that concern be addressed by this plan?
So I think the commuter rail has got a number of influencers and participants that are not necessarily engaged in what we're trying to do to help our community, our county. So there are interests that are beyond, way beyond what is what we want as a result. And so I say that we are always trying, but when you're not actually the decision maker or the largest influencer, it can be very difficult. On the other behalf, though, I think that every one of the northern towns would say that if we could get better bus service, that we could actually provide the bus service inside of those three towns that we have in Charlotte, not the existing, but the new idea that buses would be reliable, that they would be the kind of attract riders that would be able to move between the northern towns. I think that all of the mayors in the north think that that is a good idea. So when you look at this mobility plan, there's the mobility around bikes and trails and sidewalks, walkable and bikeable cities and towns. But when you look at the idea of what is the real investment, it is a reliable bus system. Then you have to figure out, how do you support a reliable bus system, which then takes you to the question around mass transit. And that's when the rail comes in. So I'd like to begin with, let's have some successes around building a walkable, bikeable community and build a great bus system, electric buses, regular routes that could be within a time frame that works for the public instead of the time frame that works for how many buses we have.
Some of the other things you've been talking about at this retreat, you and council have been discussing something that's been tried a few times before and has failed: longer terms for council members and the mayor, and higher pay for the mayor and city council. Last year, a citizens advisory committee made these recommendations, endorsing expanding terms of city council members from 2 to 4 years, staggering mayoral and council elections every 2 years, so that not the whole council would not turn over then every 2 years, term limits of 2 4-year terms, and changing the makeup of council to 8 district representatives and 3 at-large from the current 7 and 4. Where do you stand on all of these things?
So let me just start off with some of those things. you know, we asked the governance committee to come in and help us look at the Council of the Future and what we needed to do. So the first thing is that North Carolina doesn't allow for term limits. So that was kind of one of the things that you think of aspirational, but not ready for us to do now. Staggered terms, I think, is a result of how and when we elect people. And I think that staggered terms was something that the council at the retreat discussed, but perhaps said, is this the right time? I think the two major initiatives are the idea of having four-year terms, and there are two ways to do that, by referendum or by the council having a vote, which means that it could be a referendum if citizens disagree with the idea of what council's doing. That, I think, is the number one choice that we're continuing to look at. On the pay, as someone who understands that we need to have people in these, we have the opportunity to serve. And it's not just the pay, it's the time and energy that you have to have. But pay is one component. And I do believe that if we bring our pay to the same level of the county commissioners, that is an idea that the time has come to do that. Not to say that we have to have just pay to make people have the opportunity to serve. You know, we have to look at how we do our work to give people, more people, the opportunity to sit at this table.
That is the one of the recommendations of this Citizens Advisory Committee pay raises, to put you on par with what the county commission is being paid. I think the mayor, are compensated at the level of $45,912 a year, and city council
really
members...
I had no idea what that compensation was.
This could be wrong. I'd check my stub if I were you.
Okay.
City council members make $34,546. On the county commission, the chair of the county commission, you should have a discussion with this with him, $58,125, and members of the commission make $50,020. Give me an example. People look at this and say, but you're part-time. That's a lot of money for a part-time job. But from what I've been able to witness, and I'm a real outsider here, but from what I've been able to witness, is this is not a part-time job, is it?
Well, I think that it depends on how you approach the work. I think it truly is a huge time commitment. If you are going to have a job and then you still have constituent issues, you may be working all night. I mean, it is a second job. For me, I think as we see the growth in the city, the amount of initiatives that we're going, think about this. We have got Charlotte Moves going on. We're trying to develop a jobs program that makes sure that people have the ability to work in our city, our affordable housing program. I think that we have actually expanded and grown so much to meet the needs of our community that it is something that should be looked at as a commitment, a major commitment of time and effort. Now, my thinking on this is that we need to have people that can do the work. And that is a personal decision, whether or not you can do the things in your life. It's Mr. Mitchell's situation. Can you make a decision that allows you to support your personal goals and beliefs as well as serve this community? And I think everybody has to make that decision.
Do you think the average city council person, and for that matter, you, how much time did they put into this job on an average basis?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm not going to try to guess because they're very different. We have council members that do work and have a job that they are doing, and so their hours may be very different, but their impact may be exactly the same.
Would, if this goes through, would this council be voting on their own pay, or would this go into effect following the next election and the turnover of council and the turnover of mayor, if there is a turnover?
So I understand that that's a great question, and the council had a discussion about that, and I think that there's a point of view that we need to do it now, and there also is a point of view that it should apply to the next council. There was no resolution on that. I'm just going to be frank. There was no resolution on that.
Just so people know, Ed Driggs, the Republican on council, his personal preference would be to delay any compensation decision until after the pandemic. I'm not sure why, but he also recommends some changes on the recommendation with regard to at-large versus district members. But the cost to the city of the suggested pay raise is $196,386 per year, based on a general fund budget of $718.8 million. Is that a drop in the bucket, or is that a lot of money?
Symbolically, I think it's both a drop in the bucket and not a lot of money. When you think about what we have to do and accomplish, don't you want your very best talent at the table? And don't you want to include the opportunity for people to bring their talent to the table? And if $100,000 for 12 people is going to be that influential, I think we're missing the point.
The advisory committee also recommended moving to nonpartisan elections. Right now, every member of the county commission is a Democrat. Every member of the city council, but two, are Democrats. This move to go to nonpartisan elections, I'm told, would put Charlotte on the same page as a majority of municipalities in the state and around the nation. But Democrats run the show here. Are Democrats going to be willing to suddenly be nonpartisan and risk losing influence on these two governing bodies?
So I can understand where it is statistically, but most communities, excuse me, in this country are very small. We're no longer, if you compared us to all other major cities, almost every one of those has partisan elections. I think that this would be one of those suggestions that has been debated. Even among the governance group, it was only a one-person majority suggested it go that way. So you can see if an advisory group is just barely supporting it with one vote in the, to make that recommendation, then you can imagine that it's not going to be something that we're going to see happen. And in fact, the council has said that there is no interest in nonpartisan elections. There's some advocacy for it, but no, right now I do not expect that to happen.
Is this something that voters would want? It seems to me that voters, everybody is partisan in some way, but voters would be better served to know your party affiliation because that gives them an idea of where your head is at.
You know, even in nonpartisan elections, people have a label of Democrat or Republican. It's your public record. You know what it is. You register. You may be in a nonpartisan race. Our school board is nonpartisan, but I think if you looked at it, most people identify as having one point of view either among the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. So it's ideally one of those things that people often talk about, but in reality, people take a stance one way or the other. There might be a group, you know, in some of our larger cities that are more diverse, you will have Green Party, you will have the Libertarian Party. And we have that in Mecklenburg County right now. They just don't have the numbers that you would have for the two-party system that has existed for so long.
So am I hearing you saying that even though you discussed this, this is dead in the water?
I would say it certainly can't swim very well.
Okay. We have about 20 seconds left. Charlotte has lost another pioneer. Theresia Clark Elder died at the age of 93 last week. In the limited time, in the 15 seconds we have left, talk about her and her contributions.
She made the West Side what it is today. She embraced it. She's a West Charlotte Good Samaritan nurse, someone that cared about the public health for Black people, especially Black moms. She was my mentor. She was my kindness guide. I never met her without a smile. She was a woman of the year in Charlotte. So thank you, Theresia Elder, for giving us 93 years.
And thank you, Charlotte Mayor Vialiles, for joining us. We'll see you again next month, I presume. Thanks for the hour.
Thank you.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.